that Imam Khomeini made, as you said, on a pretty materialistic, secular world in which religion was marginalized, and how Imam, through by living Islam, made an enormous impact on reviving and putting religion back on the world map. But now we want to move on a bit more, because I remember, as you will as well, that Imam Khomeini, rahmatullah, the first thing I remember about him was his call for unity. And he would say that it is perfectly permissible to go to Sunni mosques and pray behind a Sunni prayer imam and so on and so forth, so that we could foster fraternity, unity, in the spirit that our Holy Prophet, peace be upon him, used to do right at the beginning and the outset of Islam, to bring brotherhood and genuine friendship amongst each other, so that this, with this unity, we would become powerful in this world. Your take on that, Dr. Mahdi Tarabi?
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. It's exactly as you said it, which is that, you know, the only ones that benefit from, you know, us fighting, Sunni Shia fighting, are the enemies of Islam.
Exactly.
So it's
exactly.
as simple as that.
It's as simple
there's
as
really
that.
Not, yeah. You know, it's not really that complicated.
No, it's not.
You know, the things that we have differences on, well, you know, that's just the way it is.
Yeah.
But, you know, the majority of things we don't have differences on.
And the other thing was that we were
so
asked...
You focus on that.
You focus
you talk
on
about
that, yes.
the other things,
yeah.
and you do it in a peaceful way, and you do it
sure.
as you would with your brother, in the sense that you love each other, and you, you know, take care of each other, and you help each other.
Yes.
And the difference is you try to work out with each other.
Well,
so
the other thing
you know?
Was, Dr. Madita, I'm sorry to interrupt, but the other thing is that, as far as what I remember, the message was that there was no need for a Shia to be a Sunni or a Sunni to be a Shia. The main thing was that we, you know, respect each other's beliefs, respect each other's points of view, but the main thing is that we are united in terms of our purpose in living Islam, you know, for creating this Islamic civilization and, you know, presenting an alternative to the rest of the world that is sinking in social ills and, you know, and corruption and all kinds of deviance, which, you know, Islam purifies us from.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And look at our history. I mean,
yeah.
you know, the reason that, you know, they were able to come and take over the Muslim world is because we were divided. I mean, it's simple.
Yeah.
It's not that difficult.
No, it's not. It's not
okay.
rocket science, as they say.
It's not rocket science.
Yeah.
Okay. When we were divided, they were united. They took over.
Exactly.
Wassalam.
Okay. Wassalam. Yes, exactly.
Okay.
I could see that even now. Yeah, absolutely.
Okay.
Yeah.
And they're still doing it.
Yeah.
And the reason they like having Al Saud be the guardians of Mecca and Medina is because, and the Takfiris is because that's going
to
lead, you know,
to more division.
That helps them. That helps them. Control of the Muslim world.
Exactly.
And if you get rid of Al Saud and the Takfiris, that's it.
You've absolutely.
Got, you know, I mean, how much better would that be for the Muslims, right?
Absolutely, absolutely. Because this is the main source of contention at the moment, the main root cause of...
And remember, the Takfiris are not Sunni.
No, they're not. No, no.
The Takfiris are neither Sunni nor Shia.
No,
Takfiris.
They're enemies. They're actually the enemies.
They're
hypocrites
that the Quran speaks about.
They're
the ones that are doing the bidding of the Zionists in America.
Exactly, exactly.
That's it.
Yeah.
Okay, why are you so... you know, when are you going to get it?
Hmm. Absolutely.
I almost said it.
why are you going to get... Because, I mean, it's in the words of Netanyahu himself. He says Saudi is the last line of defense for this illegitimate state of Israel.
I'm just saying, you know, to all Muslims, Sunni, Shia... young, old, you know, brothers
yeah.
and sisters.
Sure.
You know, it's so clear to everyone now what's going on.
Exactly.
You know, whatever, 30 years ago, whatever. Okay? Isn't it clear now who's with who gets money from who is, you know, giving money to cannibals and organ eaters, and who is...
Yes, yes, Vladimir Putin, who said, yes, I'm not going to support organ eaters. I don't want my kidney to be cooked by a takfiri.
You know,
yeah.
it's time to step up. And
exactly.
I'm talking, you know, mainly the Sunni brothers and sisters. You see the realities. Why are you still stuck? Why are you still worried about? What are you still, you know, why are you still confused?
Mm.
Why are you confused? Look at what happened to Ikhwan.
Yes.
They trusted, they went with the Saudis, they went with the Americans. They got burned. This is mainly, you know, addressed to the Sunni brothers and sisters.
Yes, absolutely.
Look at what has happened in the last year.
Yes. Particularly in Egypt, yes.
Egypt, in Turkey, and all those places where the so-called, you know...
Brotherhood.
The mainstream, moderate, the proper, you know, Islamic movements, the minute they aligned themselves with the Saudis and with the Israelis and the Americans, they got burnt.
They got burnt,
They got stabbed in the back.
Exactly. And Imam Khomeini, may God bless his soul, was warning against this kind of thing, wasn't he? He was telling them...
Why are you still having such problems with Shias?
Exactly.
What's your problem?
Yeah.
Who's been talking about unity since, you know, 40 years?
Yeah, exactly.
Who's been supporting, you know, Sunni resistance movements like Hamas?
Like Hamas in Palestine, yes, absolutely.
Right? Who is the one that's, you know, supporting, you know, getting support from Israel?
Exactly.
And getting support from America and getting support from the Saudis. The Saudis, you know, Morsi comes to power, Saudis give him a couple billion in order to buy him off.
Yes.
The minute he's overthrown, the first person congratulating, you know, the military in Egypt is Saudi Arabia.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Is that,
yes.
That
General,
who you want to
General
be your leader?
Sisi got a pat in the back there. Yes, absolutely.
You want Al Saud to be your leaders? Is that the kind of leaders you want? Forget about Sunni Shia.
Yeah.
Is that who you want to be your leader? Or do you want somebody who's been talking about unity, who's been doing, who's been acting it, who's been...
Living
who's,
it,
who's
yeah.
been acting, living on it.
Living on it,
yes. For the last 34 years.
Exactly. Exactly.
Who was able to become independent from their, you know, previous imperial master, who's, you know... Everybody's educated. Everybody's participating in the elections. Everybody's, you know, has a future. And yes, there are difficulties. Of course, there's sanctions. There's things that all so-called developing countries are going through. But where would you rather be today?
Yes.
Where is
That's
the
a very good question. Very
where
good
is the
question.
Future today?
Yes.
Right?
Quite.
So now you have a generation of youth in the Muslim world who are either faced with becoming Takfiris, or, you know, becoming westernized, you know, servants of America and Israel. That's it. These are the two options they're giving you.
My God, they're both ugly. Not a choice I'd like to make.
This is the way. And, you know, either way, you're abandoning your religion.
Of course you are.
Right?
Of course you are.
Either way, you're going against the precepts of your religion.
Yeah, exactly.
Against the Quran, against the Sunnah.
Yes, exactly.
If you become the servants of non-Muslims, you're going against it. If you become Takfiri and, you know, organ-eating cannibals, you're going against your religion. So
They're
basically saying to you, you got to give up your religion. So why do you have a problem with Imam now still?
Exactly. That's a very good question.
Didn't Imam show a successful way of being able to maintain your religion?
Sure.
And
the other thing I wanted to raise, Dr. Mahdi Tarabi,
and
was...
And maintain your servitude to God and to maintain your allegiance to the Prophet, peace be upon him, without having to become a servant, without having to become a crazy...
A slave.
You know, lunatic.
A slave and a lunatic.
Organ eater.
Yeah.
I mean, isn't that good? Isn't that a way to go? Isn't that maybe an option you should start considering?
Well, I must admit and I must confess, Dr. Mahdi Tarabi, that Imam Khomeini, may God bless his soul, you know, he began the whole process of Unity Week. You know, he came up with this Unity Week, this conference by which we could all come together on the birthday of the Holy Prophet. Doesn't matter about the differences of what we understand historically.
I mean,
that was the genius of the whole thing.
Instead of turning it into a point of contention, he said, okay, one Ravayat, one Hadith is this day, the other one is the other one. So we'll have the whole week.
We'll have the whole week to celebrate the Holy Prophet's
birthday. We'll celebrate the whole week. You know,
why not?
It's a week apart or whatever, a couple
days
apart.
We get 2 weeks for Christmas, don't we?
Right. So then you have what's day, you know, which is the Friday of Ramadan.
That's right,
you know?
Yes.
I mean, excuse me, are the Palestinians Shia? Is that the reason why we support
them? No, I don't think they are, as far as I remember.
I mean, who supported the Palestinians more than Imam and his movement?
That's right.
Who's paid more for this stance in the international era than Iran?
Absolutely.
So why are you still stuck with this? Why are you still following people like Al Saud and these, you know, ignorant people who claim to follow Islam, but they're just servants of the non-Muslims? When are you going to wake up? When are you going to finally get it? Look at what happened to Morsi. Where is Morsi today? the first democratically civilian elected president of Egypt.
That's right.
Just think about that.
Yeah.
Why? Because instead of going and becoming close with those people who were supporting you for 40 years, when everybody else, when, you know, you remember at the beginning in the 80s,
yes.
who was supporting Ikhwan in Egypt when they were all being sent to prison and being executed?
It was Iran.
Right.
It was the Islamic Revolution.
Right. And so what happens? So instead of going and, you know, sticking with the one that's proven itself to be the real deal.
The real deal. McCoy, that's right. Yes.
The real McCoy.
The real McCoy. The voice of the voiceless.
You go, you know, trying to satisfy the Saudis and, you know, calling Shias Najis and, you know, whatever.
Or whatever, yes. That's right.
You know, talking about the way they did about Hezbollah in Syria and whatever and all that stuff. And what's the result?
Well, there we are. I think that.
You know, your own defense minister does a coup d'état.
Yeah.
And, you know, now you got the Europeans and the American envoys coming and telling you, well, you know, just accept reality. Let's move on.
Yes.
You know.
Yeah.
And so I think, you know, the more we progress in history, the longer we are around and we see the things as they are happening, the more we realize that from the very, very beginning, Imam had gotten it right all the way.
All the way, he was. I mean, this is the miracle, isn't it? I mean, this is the genius of it all that just shows the, you know, some kind of divine quality that of the Imam that he.
Well, if you're connected, you're connected,
yeah.
and it's not anything mysterious.
No,
you have to be careful the way you said it. People might think there's some sort of we're trying to. There's nothing mysterious about it. This is the normal way that Allah works.
This is the normal way that Allah works.
You're
quite right, sir.
I stand corrected. Yes. Yes. You have to be careful the way you talk about these things because this is exactly the things they use against us.
Yes.
When you read the Quran, this is a normal cause and effect.
Trust
me, I will take care of you.
Quite.
This is not a miracle. It's a normal way that Allah does things.
Yes.
He says, I'm your wali. What does that mean? Not Tahut, not, you know, others are your wali. When you trust in Allah the way Imam did, you will be successful.
You will be successful, absolutely.
More than that, we even have the ayat in the Quran, which all the Mufassirin, Sunni and Shia, say that refer to Imam Ali alayhi salam. And they talk about being the ones that are successful and being the ones that are the party of God and
the
ones that will be, you know, the ones that are in this world, successful in this world and in the next.
That's right.
So why don't you follow the Quran? Forget about the Hadith right now. We're not talking about Hadith.
No, we're talking about Quran, yes.
I'm sorry, because you are Mr. Hadith, so I apologize.
No, the Hadith is always secondary. It's a secondary source. The primary source is the Quran.
Quran. Imam is following Imam when he talked about what he did in terms of how we should live our Islam and how we should be active politically.
Yes.
He was talking Quran.
He was talking Quran. Very nice. That's very beautiful. That's very beautiful.
So why don't you follow Quran?
Why don't you follow
Quran?
Following, because you said the Quran was kafi, wasn't it? It said that the Quran was enough. And the Imam proved that the Quran is enough if you follow it.
Well, what I'm trying to say is that when you follow Imam Khomeini, you're following the Quran.
You're following the Quran, absolutely.
It's not about Sunni Shia.
No, it's not.
Why was Imam successful? Why was the Islamic Republic successful?
Yes.
Why is the Islamic Republic successful? Why do we have great leaders like Rahbar, the supreme leader that we have?
Yes.
And he's a great leader. I mean, look at him. I mean, I'm talking about just, you know, as a Muslim, looking at somebody as a religious scholar, as a political leader.
Yes.
Who is guiding us.
Yes.
Isn't it great? You know, thank God we have somebody like him.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely.
Okay, and this is not about, you know, hero worship. This is about thanking God for, you know, putting the appropriate leaders for us.
Exactly.
Before there was Imam.
Yes.
And, you know, and the reason these people are good leaders is because they follow Islam. They follow the Quran. They follow the school of Ahlul Bayt, the Islam that is taught by Ahlul Bayt. And God says that if you do this, you will be successful.
You'll get good governance.
You won't be oppressed. You won't be, you know, 1 minute the president, the next minute in jail.
In jail, yes. I mean, this is what we can say about the beautiful scene that we saw just very recently with Dr. Rouhani's inauguration as president, that how smoothly things were transferred.
I mean,
And again, it came with a kiss from the Supreme Leader. You don't get kissed often as a president,
again,
do you?
Again, let's make it real for a second.
Yeah. Yeah.
In the speech at that time, what was the main point that the Supreme Leader talked about?
Sure.
He said, it is a great blessing that the transfer of government in our country is done peacefully.
It's done peacefully, absolutely. Absolutely.
He said, this is one of the greatest blessings.
This is a great thing, absolutely.
And then he said, look at Egypt.
Look at
all
Egypt.
The other countries.
Yes, he did. He did compare it. Of course he compared it.
So look at us. Yeah. We followed Imam. Imam was following the Quran and the school of Ahlul Bayt, which is Faghalain.
Yes.
Quran and Ahlul Bayt, which is goes back to what the Prophet says.
Yes.
The Prophet, peace be upon him, said, I will leave you two weighty matters. I will leave with you two weighty things.
Sure.
The Quran and my Ahlul Bayt.
Yes.
And if you follow them, you will be successful. So why don't you follow them?
No, that's a very good question. It's a very good question to our audience.
Why are you going after people and things that have no value to you?
No.
Will lead you to Zulamat.
Yes, and will lead you astray. Yeah.
They will lead you to darkness.
Darkness.
Look at what happened to Morsi. Make it a lesson for yourself.
Mm.
Look at these poor guys in Turkey, in Ankara.
Absolutely.
They don't know what to do now.
There's the same problem in Tunisia. I mean, this is widespread, you know. I mean, Libya is in absolute chaos. I mean, what can you say?
You know, so this is the thing.
Mm.
When Imam came, there were, you know, the humanity, and especially the Muslims, were thirsting and were completely in need of guidance.
Yes.
The guidance, that's the real guidance. If you're going to have, to go back to our example that we used in the previous program.
Yes.
If you have the computer and then you put the wrong
software in it,
system on it, it's not going to work.
Yeah, it doesn't work.
You might even have it working for a while, but then there's so many bugs in it and there's so many problems with it that eventually it crashes.
It crashes. Very good.
Good. Are we now talking, you know?
I think so. It's the same language.
You get it?
Yeah, absolutely. I think that it's a very good paradigm. It's a very good model to express the idea.
It might work for a while. It's like, you know, it's okay. Should we go further on this? It's like Apple versus Windows. Okay.
Yeah, chalk and cheese.
You know, you're going to have certain operating systems. They might work for a while, but they've got so many bugs and problems in them, they're going to crash after a while.
Well, they're going to crash, exactly.
Some of them don't even work to begin with. Mm. Others, they work for a while and they crash. What you want is you want the one that doesn't have the bugs in it.
That's right. It's got the antivirus in it, you know. It's.
It doesn't even need the antivirus. Beyond all this stuff.
Very good point, yes. It doesn't even need the antivirus. You're absolutely right.
Right?
Yeah.
So, when you're a Muslim, and you have a person like Imam coming and living at approximately the same time you did, right? You have no excuse on the Day of Judgment then.
No.
You can't say to Allah, I didn't know. He said, why? You didn't know? Well, there was Imam. He was on every channel on TV.
That's a very good point, yeah.
Right?
I mean, I watched him on News at 10, you know, on ITN in the UK, so I don't have much of an excuse either,
right.
You know.
You know, 50,000 websites, you know.
Yeah.
Hundreds of books, you know.
True.
What's your excuse on the Day of Judgment? I didn't know. Of course you knew.
Of course you knew.
You knew, not only knew because of the Quran and the Rivayat that were, you know, available to you, but more than that, it's you had somebody who, you know, is an Islamic scholar.
Yes.
Who is a practicing, you know, Muslim, who is a political leader, telling you.
Yes.
So, alhamdulillah, those of us who were, you know, fortunate enough to have been living in his time, you know, alhamdulillah, because he really taught us real Islam.
Sure.
Because who knows where we would be without him?
Oh my goodness! I think the tyranny of the Shah would still be continuing to this day.
You know what's even worse than that? We would be caricatures of Muslims.
You would be. That's true.
Yeah.
Absolutely
and you too,
true.
By the way.
I know. I wouldn't be here for a start. I mean, where would Scottish independence be? You know, I don't think anything would have happened.
Well, I'm trying to simply say that even if you were Muslim, which is inshallah we would all be,
inshallah.
But we would be very, you know, it would be a caricature. It would be a very kind
I don't know. Maybe I would have been in another faith.
A weak version of it. You know,
yes.
We have this thing. I mean, Imam comes and tells us, look, if you want to do Islam, it's all of it. It's holistic.
It's holistic.
It's a complete package. It's a full program.
Full program, yep.
It's, you know, it's your night prayers and it's, you know, your political activity during the day. This is also what Supreme Leader talked about. We talked about this in the previous program.
That's right.
You know, he would you would pray at night and beg for mercy from Allah, and you know, have that kind of
faith and trust in
God,
Allah,
which is what you want.
Yes,
that you know you have nothing and you have to get everything from Allah.
Get everything from Allah. Yes, absolutely.
And during the day, you would come out like a lion and be a champion of the Muslims. The one that
and the champion of the oppressed, yes, absolutely.
Of all the oppressed.
Of all the oppressed, absolutely.
So this is what Islam is. It's not just, praying and fasting. It's more than that. It's good. You pray, you fast, that's the basis of it.
That's the basis of it, yes.
Right.
Yes.
So, again, nobody should misunderstand what we're saying. We're not saying you shouldn't...
No, we're not saying that. No, this is the basis of it.
We're saying that's the minimum.
That's the minimum, yeah. That's the minimum, absolutely.
And I'm not claiming that I'm any better than anyone or that I do more than all that.
No.
I'm doing the minimum as well. But yes, that's the minimum. Don't think that that's the maximum. That's not the maximum. That's just the beginning.
That's just the beginning, yes.
The maximum, or close to the maximum, is what you see with a person like Imam.
Imam
the real maximum is what you see with the Prophet,
absolutely. May God bless
him. And with the Imam, alayhi salam.
Sure.
Right,
because it's all about us trying to become to achieve some kind of perfection and salvation in this world. And Imam Khomeini, may God bless him, gave us a living example of what that could be in this century,
right,
and beyond.
You're right, and it's not just this kind of parochial. I think about it, and it really upsets me to think about that they would turn Islam into this kind of very unimportant thing of the way you clean yourself and the way you pray and that's it. Allah, all the 125,000 prophets because of that.
My God.
All the wars, all the struggles. All the struggles of the Prophet, peace be upon him. All the struggles of the Imams. Shahadat. Karbala, Ashura, because of that.
No, it's ridiculous.
Is that it? I mean, it's ridiculous.
It's ridiculous.
It's a ridiculous notion that this would be Islam. It's a ridiculous notion that Islam wouldn't be political. It's a ridiculous notion.
Absolutely.
It's not even worth discussing.
No.
This is the problem
it's a very serious point. This is something that really our listeners must take.
For 34 years, we're trying to explain to the Muslims themselves that, no, really, Islam is political. It's not even worth discussing. It's not even... Of course it's political.
It's not even... Yeah, it should be something second nature to you.
Of course it's political.
Yeah.
Of course it has to do with society. Of course it has to do with helping the poor. Of course it has to do with helping the oppressed.
Yeah. And establishing an Islamic civilization, a system.
Exactly.
A system by which we live
and
die.
And establishing Islamic governments is just the first step for that.
Yes.
The next step is, and the ultimate goal is Islamic civilization.
Exactly. Exactly.
Okay, and we're not the ones that are imperialist and wanting to impose it on all of humanity, because that's what's going to happen when we have Zuhur.
Yes.
In terms of, that's not our job. Our job is not to impose things on anyone.
No.
Okay?
No.
I don't even know what's going to happen after Zuhur, but that's not even my concern right now.
No,
because Zuhur is going to happen, and whatever's going to happen is going to happen.
That's that. But at this moment in time, we're concentrating,
at
as you say, on getting
exactly.
the foundations in place.
At this moment in time, our goal is to build a strong, powerful, enlightened, conscious, ethical, moral Islamic civilization. All
sure.
of us.
Sure, sure.
All
absolutely.
Of us.
All of us.
Every part of
Sunni,
of
Shia, everybody. Everybody's involved in this.
Those living in the Muslim majority
this is a big
Africa,
project.
Asia, wherever.
Yeah.
Those living in non-Muslim countries who, consider their primary existential reality and identity as being Muslim and not other things.
Sure.
Or those other things as being, secondary to that. That's your job right now. That's our job right now.
Absolutely.
We have to build Islamic civilization, and it has to be a beautiful one. And it can't be the takfiri, organ-eating one.
No,
and
it can't be. No, no. I don't fancy eating anybody else's liver right now. Yeah.
And it can't be the Turkish, Jordanian, slaves and servants of America and Israel. Mm. Okay?
Yeah.
Get it?
Yes,
you see where
absolutely.
I'm going
along with
it
this.
Can't be
absolutely.
It can't be the Al Saud, authoritarian dictatorship, passing it from one brother to the next,
No, no. I mean, these are tyrannies. These are tyrannies.
Can't be Islamic.
No, I mean, these are tyrannies. They've got to be got rid of. This has got to go in the past. It's got to go into the dustbin of history.
What it is that beautiful Islam has the mom taught us.
Yes.
As the Supreme Leader has been teaching us for these years of how to stay on the Sirat al-Mustaqim.
Yes, on the path of righteousness.
You know, extreme on the left, not becoming extreme on the right.
No, no.
Right?
Absolutely.
Focusing on knowledge, focusing on education.
Wisdom.
Focusing on wisdom, focusing on, you know, building societies.
Absolutely.
Focusing on all these things that we see that this is what, you know, beauty is something that is fitra. Again, it goes back to fitra.
Yes.
You know, human beings recognize beauty immediately. Mm. You don't have to explain it.
No, you don't. No. This is something in part of their fitra.
Mm. When you look at a society like Iran, which went from being a, you know, feudalistic society, majority illiterate, you know, 50 years ago, to a society where the youth are all, you know, capable and educated and, you know, on the forefront of all these different things, who are conscious, who understand the world. I mean, isn't this beautiful? Isn't this what you want for your children?
Exactly. Dr. Mahdi Tarabi, I'm afraid once again, you know, time is against us, but, you know, we've run out of time on the program. But thank you very much indeed for that enlightening contribution to, you know, the life and times of Imam Khomeini. And, of course, we'll be speaking much more in the future about this great man. I think, you know, for all time to come, I mean, this was a personality beyond time. How can I put it? You know, I don't have the words even to express that as far as Imam Khomeini is concerned. May God bless his soul. But thanks once again, Dr. Mahdi Tarabi, for being on the program.
My pleasure.
Thank you. And it just leaves me to say for our listeners, wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. I hope you benefited from the program. May God's mercy and his blessings be upon you all. Thank you for listening and goodbye.
The Light.
The pandemic has not stopped this British musician from holding live concerts. His audience is a very special group in Danish rural areas. Jacob Shaw, a university professor, is the man behind this experiment. He says playing for the animals has been his second best option after the pandemic forced the cancellation of many events and social gatherings. Shaw says the performance for the cows has been so rewarding that he wants to continue it even after public spaces are reopened. He says the cows seem to enjoy classical music very much.
They react differently to different pieces. We played something that was slightly more upbeat, a little bit more modern, and a lot of them didn't like it and they went away. And I think that the type of pieces which is closer to their voice, closer to their mooing, which could be similar actually to a cello, which is why it's so successful with them, they prefer that.
The cello player is sometimes accompanied by other musicians. They say the experience has helped them practice and also relieve some of the stress of a live concert.
Science fiction has turned into reality, or at least that's how the developer of Aircar describes his vehicle when it transforms from a car into an aircraft in less than 3 minutes. This prototype flying car was designed and created by Slovakian transportation professor Stefan Klein. He says that his design opens a new category and transportation. The dual-mode vehicle composed a 35-minute flight in this week between the two Slovakian airports. So far, it has completed more than 40 hours of test flight. Air car can fly about 1,000 kilometers at a height of over 2,500 meters. That makes the dream of those who wish to ride above traffic closer to reality. A digital art museum in the Japanese capital has unveiled a stunning exhibition offering visitors an intimate interaction with nature. One of the attractions of the show is Floating Flower Garden, which is a mirrored room filled with 13,000 orchid flowers. The orchids are dangling from the ceiling and move up once a visitor walks through in the space and approaches the flowers. Once the visitors move past the flowers, descend again. This makes the visitors able to freely wander around the three-dimensional flower mass space. Tokyo-based digital art group Team Lab that runs this exhibition says the artwork is designed to help people think that they are part of the garden.
This is an installation filled with these flowers. As you walk towards them, the flowers slowly move up to create an area of space for you. Surrounded so completely by flowers, you feel immersed in the flowers, the garden itself.
There are several other installations in this exhibition. One is an outdoor piece filled with Ovid sculptures that light up after the sun sets. Visitors can see 61 different colors of light in this section. When one of the Ovids tipped over by a hand or the wind, it emits a sound. The sound is then echoed by the surrounding Ovids. In a school in the Ukrainian capital, kids learn about saving the environment and helping those in need through a creative way. Students put plastic bottles in a machine as currency. Then they can select what they would like to spend money on. Buying food for stray animals and donating to children with special needs are some of the choices. The project was first launched in a mall in Kiev a few months ago. Afterwards, the designers found out that children were the most frequent users of this machine.
A child drops a bottle inside and sees an immediate result. It brings joy and happiness, and everyone is excited and wants the project to thrive.
The founders seek to install more and more machines in schools across Ukraine to raise environmental awareness among younger generations. Since the start of the project in October last year, over 5 tons of plastic has been collected from 6 machines.
India is known not only for its cultural diversity, but also for a vibrant assortment of uncountable dishes. Butter chicken is the only one delight you wouldn't like to miss while visiting Indian restaurants, especially if it is prepared by a celebrity chef like Saransh Goyla. Goyla's coal-fired oven is now sending a mouth-watering scent through India's commercial hub, Mumbai, as the young chef takes a break from COVID-19 relief efforts and resumes work. He is the one who established the first global butter chicken brand and authored the acclaimed food travelogue, India on My Platter. But with the coronavirus forcing people into isolation, his networks were also hit. So Goyla launched a non-profit platform called COVID Meals for India in April to connect thousands of volunteer home cooks and frontline workers.
The pandemic had a large impact on our business. Having said that, Goyla Butter Chicken from the start was always focused on deliveries and takeaway. So in that sense, our loss of revenue and a loss of business was slightly lesser than an average restaurant. But a lot of my friends, restaurateurs who are in this industry have gone through an extremely tough time. The pandemic has taken its toll on our industry, And I think it has set us back by at least a couple of years.
Koila found his calling early, winning a televised cooking competition at the age of 25, which led him to host a travel program showcasing regional Indian cuisine. His profile exploded in 2018 when he was invited by former MasterChef Australia judge George Kalambaris to be a guest on the hit show, with contestants asked to recreate his signature dish.
Graduation is an exciting moment for all schoolgoers, but the occasion turns more joyful if it ends with a celebration like Scarlet Sales Festival, which is held in St. Petersburg in Russia at the end of the school year. The annual event is part of the famous White Nights Festival, traditionally held in summer, with spectacular fireworks, numerous music concerts, and a massive water show. Normally, thousands of domestic and foreign tourists flock to the city to watch the colorful event. But this year, the COVID-19 pandemic limited the number of the attendees. The festival began in the 1960s when several Russian schools united to celebrate the end of the academic year. That is in connection with the symbolism of the popular 1922 children's book, Scarlet Sails, by Alexander Grin. Indonesia is dealing with a surge in coronavirus infections, but that has not stopped the people from observing the Yatnya Kasada Festival. Thousands of people brave the climb to the summit of Mount Bromo in eastern Java province to observe the ancient ritual. They made offerings ranging from fruits and crops to livestock by throwing the items to the pit of an active volcano. They believe the practice brings blessings and plenitude and helps them express gratitude for what they have. This year's festival was overshadowed by the coronavirus pandemic, with participants required to adhere to strict health protocols. China's space agency has released videos of its first Mars rover as it's exploring the red planet's surface. The rover is named Zhurong. It's now investigating a vast plane known as Utopia Planitia on Mars's northern hemisphere. The rover successfully landed on Mars in mid-May. It is studying the red planet's surface rocks and atmosphere. It also looks for signs of life, including any subsurface water or ice. The solar-powered Chinese robot weighs around 240 kilograms and has 6 wheels. China is the second country after the U.S. to operate a rover on Mars. A university in the Venezuelan capital Caracas has turned its roof into a garden and uses sustainable energy to light up its classes. The roof of Andres Bello Catholic University is covered with plants and 30 solar panels. The panels, along with a wind turbine, produced the 7,400 watts of electricity to illuminate that area and light 2 rooms in the building. The roof is now functioning as a self-sufficient and environmentally friendly open-air classroom. The proposal for the project was put forward by 2 students. The aim is to educate people about renewable energy and the threat of climate change.
A small New Hampshire town has been hit by a series of car break-ins over the last few weeks. People were shocked when they finally discovered the mischievous criminal. A large black bear has been identified as the bandit wreaking havoc in the town of Fulton. The naughty mammal was caught on camera as it got on its 2 hind legs and skillfully opened the door of a car. Police say the bear was most likely rummaging for food. Authorities have asked people to remove food from their cars to avoid enticing the troublesome animal. A Jordanian woman is receiving high demands for the soap she produces. Why? Because she uses an unusual ingredient. Lara Altiti makes soap out of camel milk. She tours different cities in Jordan to find the best camel farms for her business. Titi uses camel milk as the major ingredient for the soap she produces. That's because she says it has rich benefits and contains more vitamins than cow milks.
The first stage includes weighing the soap, and I include different kinds of oil to preserve the quality of the soap and its therapeutic benefit. We need to have high foam and tough consistency, and we don't want it to be rancid. We place high importance on the therapeutic material that we add during the production process.
Titi started her soap line at home using a manual process and then expanded it to an independent workshop. Her soap line has now become very popular in Jordan. Titi produces more than 4,000 soap bars a month. She sells them both to domestic and international customers.
If you're a car lover, this story is for you. Over 300 classic vehicles have taken part in a retro rally across Estonia. The 1,000-kilometer rally kicked off in the town of Perde. It drew participants from Latvia and Finland. Their motto is Straight Ahead to the Past. The vintage cars participated in the event are mostly produced between 1930 and 1980. Experts say all the vehicles are in good condition. However, they doubt if all the vehicles can make it to the end of the five-day rally.
The German firm's electric air taxi takes its first flight at a show in an airport near the French capital, Paris. Volocopter's flying taxi, which looks like a tiny helicopter, took off and landed vertically over the airport with no passenger on board during a three-minute trial. Aside from its two-passenger capacity, the aircraft also has some room for luggage. It flew a 500-meter route at speeds of up to 30 kilometers per hour and 30 meters high along the airfield. The flying taxi service would first be operated by a licensed pilot, but the flight would be fully automated over a period of time.
With respect to regulation, initially we will have a fully certified, fully licensed helicopter pilot, just to fit into existing regulation. But we believe over time it can be much simpler to obtain such an operating license for a volocopter. And of course, in the last instance, we want to take a pilot requirement out, and we want these vehicles to fly fully automated. So you will not need a pilot license anymore. You can just summon the volocopter. It will come and pick you up and bring you safely to your destination.
The German firm is entering the urban mobility market with high hopes of playing a major role in the infant industry. Volocopter says its objective is to have a service in operation for 2024 for the 2024 Olympic Games. Walking around the city without shoes can be delightful. If you're interested in the experience, visit the Russian capital. A 3.5-kilometer long barefoot trail has recently opened in Moscow's Elk Island Park. It's made of various materials such as pine bark, beach pebbles, and clay. Taking around 40 minutes to complete, the path attracts hundreds of visitors every day. However, some people find it difficult to walk without shoes, calling the path a torture trail. A zoo in Turkey has welcomed a baby elephant from an endangered species. The birth of a female calf at Izmir Wildlife Park has caused excitement in keepers and visitors. The calf, yet to be named, is the third offspring of parents from Asian species. The International Union for the Conservation of Nature classifies the Asian elephant as endangered due to their rapid decline in the wild. The Asian elephants are primarily threatened by poaching, fragmentation, and loss and degradation of habitat. Currently, around 20 to 40,000 Asian elephants are living across the world, five of which inhabiting Turkey's Izmir Zoo.
Ask the followers of the remembrance if ye know not.
You're listening to the program The Key on IRIB English Radio with Shiraz Hossein Agha, a graduate of Islamic Seminary of Rome and a PhD in philosophy.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Welcome to our program The Key here at IRIB English Radio. I'm your host, Shiraz Agha. Thank you for joining us here today. If you remember, we've been talking about prophethood and the necessity of prophethood, as well as the necessity of the divine revelation. In some of our previous sessions, we said that human beings are naturally social animals, naturally social beings. They come together to form societies because they cannot live on their own. They cannot sustain their existence in this world if they live alone. There has to be a distribution of labor so that the tasks are distributed amongst human beings. Each human being performs a certain task and shares the results of his efforts with other human beings so they can benefit from that and their existence can be sustained. We also said that in the formation of societies, human beings naturally seek out their own personal interests. Everybody wants to do what's best for himself. Sometimes this leads to a harm that is inflicted upon others. And for this reason, there has to be some sort of law which can prevent human beings from oppressing and harming one another and from chaos and for chaos to occur in society. We said that this law cannot be formulated by and cannot be regulated by human beings themselves. Why? Because human beings are naturally deficient in their knowledge of themselves, and therefore they don't have a proper understanding of who they are. And this is one of the necessary requirements for the formation of the law that is to prevent this chaos from occurring. And it's only God who has this perfect knowledge, and therefore he should be the lawmaker and the being that formulates the law. It's possible for somebody to say that, somebody to deny this and say that, no, we have a understanding of who we are and therefore what our requirements are, and we can formulate the law based on that. And then the law that we formulate based on this knowledge will obviously be the best knowledge for us. We can answer this question in two ways. First of all, history tells us, when we look at history, we see that tangibly we see that this is not true. If the knowledge that we have of ourselves was a perfect knowledge, and therefore the law that we formulated based on that knowledge was the best law possible, then why is it that we see that human beings who we see in history that societies that formulated laws based on their own understanding of themselves, we see that they constantly had to update those laws, change them, alter them, right? The more that their knowledge, that the knowledge that they had of themselves, all right, it changed and it was altered. This is one way. This shows that the knowledge that they had of themselves was deficient, and then therefore the laws that they formulated based on that was also deficient. Another way that we can answer this question is this, that in order for the formulation of this law, a knowledge of the being that this law is being formulated for, in other words, the human being, is not only required, there's another requirement also, and that is the knowledge of the environment that this being, that this law is being formulated for, exists in. In other words, the world outside of the human being, because obviously this world is also connected to the human being, right? And any law that we formulate for this human being, it has to take this environmental conditions into consideration itself. It had to take the universe outside man into consideration as well. And this is a knowledge that obviously we do not have a perfect understanding of. Thank you for joining us here on The Key. We were examining the necessity of prophethood and the necessity of the divine law. Until next time, assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
That was Shiraz Hussain Agha, a graduate of Islamic Seminary of Rome and a PhD in philosophy, on the program The Key on IRIB English Radio.
You can also send your questions to English Radio at irib.ir.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.
IRIB English Radio presents
Viewpoints.
The presence of different scholars.
Assalamu alaikum. You're listening to IRIB English Radio. This is Viewpoints. I'm your host, Muzaffar Haider, here in the studio. Today we have with us Sayyid Mahdi and Sheikh Ali. Assalamu alaikum to both of you.
Wa alaikum assalam wa rahmatullah.
Wa alaikum assalam.
So we were talking about how the rapper approves things, the leader approves things. He gives his kind of seal of approval to whatever decisions that the people make. So, okay, then, I'm from the UK, so I immediately think of the system that they have in the UK. The Queen has to give the stamp of approval to the Prime Minister, who's elected by the people in the House of Lords. So what's the difference?
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Well, if you look at Iran, there are four elections that take place here at the macro level. One is for the city management. The other one is Majlis-e-Shura, which is the parliament, right, the Iranian parliament. Third one is the Assembly of Experts, which is these 80 plus, 88, I think, is the number, mujtahids and jurisprudents. And then their job is to keep an eye on the supreme leader, mm-hmm. right, and the rahbar and the leadership, Islamic leadership, in case, something happens. Number fourth is the presidential elections, right? These are the four types of elections that take place at a macro level in Iran. And this is where people are directly involved. People have a say, right? Now, when we talk about this approval from the leadership, right, the Islamic leadership, the Waliul Faqih, we see that whether it's the, how there's a two parties in Iran. One is known as Usul Gara and the other is the reformist, right, the principalist and mm-hmm. the reformist. No matter which side's representative wins the votes, the leadership has, if you look at the history, has approved it. So it's not like the leadership is partisan or is siding right. or leaning on one side. No, there's a fair competition that takes place. And at the end of the day, the fact that whether they're from the principalist side or their reformist side, it doesn't make a difference in the final approval from the leadership, right?
Mm. Excellent.
I mean, I have a question about that, but I think I want you to finish your trail of thought.
Okay. So this is important. Again, you know, this Islamic leadership is not supposed to, is not expected to, and alhamdulillah, up until now, has not done this, that they become a, you know, side in this whole equation. No, there's a fair competition where the input of the people and the voting of the people is respected, and Rahbar takes it into consideration in that final approval. And then, again, like we said, and this is something that needs to be understood, that the legitimacy for this president comes from the leadership.
Okay.
Yes, the people had their input, but people did not give this president the legitimacy. It's the Islamic leadership. Again, we have to understand, yes, Islam and Islamic model, right? Remember, we were talking about this comparison between the liberal democracy and, as they call it, Islamic democracy, or we're calling it Mardum Salariya Dini, within the system of the Wilayatul Faqih, right?
Popular religious governance.
Popular religious governance, right? So this is fundamental difference, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then also, very quickly, before they run for the presidential election, it's not like any Tom, Dick, and Harry can run. There are departments, there are councils, there are these setups that are in place to make sure that the person who is running for the presidential elections, he qualifies to be someone who should be sitting at the seat of the president. Mm-hmm. So it's not like, you know, oh, somebody just wakes up and, you know, he's running in the elections, next thing is, no. There's a proper vetting process, and this is pre-elections.
Right,
what we talked
right.
about, the endorsement, was post-elections by the leadership.
It's a very, right?
it's a very airtight, in a way.
Yeah, I was
going
to say foolproof, but
yes. They try to make sure that the person who's running, you know, he qualifies to be up there. You know, if I were to draw a comparison like Sayyid Mahdi did, right? You know, a person like Trump can really not come into power in Iran. Because for several reasons. One of them is that Iranians are way more intelligent than Americans, right?
Yeah.
Unfortunately, Americans have been victim to the mainstream media and the propaganda
and
the lobbies and the education system. It's a long discussion. But that's one of the reasons. The other is the system itself, right? That makes sure that someone like Trump, you know, using him as a symbol, right? He cannot just crawl in and become a president through electoral votes and stuff. You know, it's in the Western liberal democracy, people who bubble up to the top are generally speaking, actually, I can say all of them, but let's keep it to generally speaking. They are those touts of the multinationals. They're the touts of those lobbies who invest in their election campaigns.
Mm-hmm.
And this is another thing, remember, we have to talk about the election campaigns in Iran, how they're different from, because now we're getting into those nitty-gritties, right? But generally speaking, in liberal democracies, these people are the touts, the mouthpieces, and they're the laborers of these big, huge, multinational lobbies and corporations. While in Iran, things are very different. The point is that when you look at the lives of the presidents, generally speaking, you know, in Iran, they have a very mardumi and a very simple lifestyle.
Of course.
Right?
Yeah, yeah.
They don't, you know, once they become president, they're up in the skies, you know, and then after they leave the presidential seat, they have these huge castles and airlines now, and their big pharmaceutical companies established. No, it's not like that. We have seen, like, at least 12, and the best of those examples is Imam Khamenei himself when he was the president. If you look at his life, his character, his bank accounts, you know, it's so crystal clear. Alhamdulillah, people, that's why people trust him. You look at Shahid Rajai, for instance, right? There have been so many good presidents. Yeah, Iranians had some not so good presidents, but yeah, this is how it is here.
So we see that in the West, I mean, at least in the UK, there's this vast amount of distrust in regards to the political system. Lots of people don't even want to vote anymore, and they say there's no point in... Is there a similar sentiment to this in Iran, or...?
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. This sentiment of not trusting the system to a large extent is not found in the Islamic Republic of Iran, right? And we have some statistics and we have some numbers as well that we can share a little bit later on in the program. But you will see that the large majority of the people do come out and they do vote. They do participate in elections. They participate in the campaigning. Interestingly, I would request any political theorist, anybody who's interested in political science, political